Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And tomorrow, Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea. The triple whammy sets sail. All the trials and tribulations will probably make for a great Talk is Jericho at some point in time. But if you want to check out what you'll be missing, just go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And don't worry, I can tell you they will most likely be at Chris Jericho Cruise Part 4. Stay tuned for more information. And stay tuned for Fozzy heading to Europe starting November 29th in Liverpool at the world-famous Cavern Club. We are sold out in Manchester, Glasgow, Swansea, Nottingham, Chester. There's only a few tickets left for Dublin, Ireland on December 4th. I know that London is almost sold out on December 12th. That was December 4th for Dublin, December 12th for London. So check out the rest of the gigs for Newcastle, Belfast, Birmingham, Bournemouth. Those tickets are still available, but they're getting fewer and far between. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information. And don't forget to check out the Fozzy Meet and Greet VIP. It is the best in the business. We play a five-song mini set for you before the show, just privately for the VIPs. So very, very cool stuff. It's going to be our most successful UK tour ever. So come join us. Just go to FozzyRock.com for all information. All right, today we got information about Colt Cabana. He's on the Jericho Cruise for the second time. He's also a podcast pioneer and was one of the first wrestlers to launch a podcast over 10 years ago, The Art of Wrestling, which he's going to be performing on the Jericho Cruise. We'll also talk about how he got started, hear about his brand new pod, Wrestling Anonymous, which is available now wherever you get your podcasts. That's a very cool idea. Cole is also talking about his short-lived stint in WWE as Scotty Goldman, his time with Rev Pro in the UK, and of course his journey to AEW, where he's one of the forefathers for what is now the hottest wrestling company in the world today. Of course, you're going to hear all about that and hear about the Wrestling Road Diaries documentary he did with Brian Danielson, how that directly led to the launch of The Art of Wrestling. You hear about Unprofessional Wrestling, another hilarious show that he does. He's also doing that on the Jericho Cruise. So Colt Cabana is all over the place. He's in the Dark Order, and he's on Talk is Jericho, starting now.
Colt Cabana talking on the microphone. Check 1, 2. Have you not been using this thing?
I have been. I have been using this thing. It's just that I want to make sure I get it right, because there's been a few times, like, and we're actually on air right now, when I've used this with, let's say, Gallows and Anderson, and Gallows screaming,
yes.
Where I come back and my producer goes, I can't use this, it's way too loud. So, because I've used a bunch of different softwares over the years, as I'm sure you have as well, and we'll talk about that being one of the pioneers of the podcast.
They don't think like we do. They're not constantly looking at these levels, wondering if it's gonna, I mean, it's just Gallows just yelling,
yeah,
thinking he's being entertaining.
But that is something that's very interesting. Like, I listen back to all my shows, because while I'm recording them, I'm always watching levels. I'm thinking about, what are we going to talk about? And you're the same. We don't have lists of questions or anything. So reading the conversation and kind of always be thinking a step ahead.
Yeah.
Is that kind of how you do your shows as well?
Well, it was important. It was important to just to sit here and talk with everybody. That's how it was, of course. But yeah, man, I've gone through so many technical problems. I'm sure you've got a bucket list.
All
lost episodes.
Yes.
Right? Just, and then you find, I remember I had such a great one. I don't, have you had MVP on yours? I'd imagine.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, and he, this was very early on, and he told the story, the whole boat story.
Yes, where he basically, paraphrasing, robbed a boat and ended up in jail for 9 years.
And as I'm doing it, I'm going, this is the craziest story. And I listen back, and my microphone is so high, his is so low, and I'm just crying at how bad this episode is going to be, which should be an amazing episode. And then some fan reached out to me and was like, do you know what the levelator was? And I was like, no. I think I had said, like, can anyone help me? And it's just this free piece of software where you put in both sides of the conversation and it makes the conversations level. So, like, we're the same
volume. Mixes it for you.
Mixes it for you. That was like a game changer for me. It was so huge. And that's, you know, those are the little things I think, and I'm sure you appreciate it as a podcaster.
Completely.
Those are the things you think about. Like, is this episode not only listenable through the story being told, but also the audio?
Is it listenable?
Is it listenable?
One of my first, I had Bret Hart on, which, you know, in the first 10 episodes, it was a big deal. And he actually sounded like he was underwater. It was one of those type of things. So it was salvageable, but it was not good. But the all-time worst one was last year. Was the 10-year anniversary of MacGruber. So I got Will Forte and I got Yoram Taccon and I can't remember the cast name. The guys that wrote it, directed it, starred in it, and me. Great conversation about the whole concept of the movie and just the whole thing. And it was funny and it was informative. And it was like, it's pretty big for me, my first movie. And when I pressed stop and send it, it did not show up on the SIM card.
Mm-hmm.
It just disappeared into the ether. So then I sent it to a software house and like, if we can find it, it'll cost you $2,000. Like, I will pay the $2,000. I got to get it. And of course, they couldn't find it. It was gone. I'm like, how the f*** does this happen? If people only knew, right?
That's a lost episode.
That's a lost episode. And what am I going to do? Call them back and say we got to do it again?
And recreate, can you recreate this conversation for us?
And if it was you and I, we could do it, but these are guys, like, I barely know them. I can't call them back like a loser and go. So even worse, I have to call them back and say that episode, it's never going to air because it's gone.
That sucks.
But so when you were talking about podcasts, and mine has been almost 8 years now, there was only a few before that, and yours was the one, The Art of Wrestling, and I'm not sure when you started doing it, but it was one of the first.
Yeah, June of 2010, I started doing it, and a lot of influences went about it. And it's funny because I want to say, even at that time, I think you were guesting on some of these shows like this. You know, like, podcasting changed big time, I think, when iTunes started putting the podcast for free on the iPod. That's kind of when it changed. So, yeah, there was audio there, and there was wrestling audio before. And I remember like Dr. Tom and D'Lo Brown would always, I think it was like NoDQ.com or it was something, where they had like a weekly show, and it was Blog Talk Radio, and it was just somebody they were calling in, and maybe this was something. But when iTunes put podcasting on their iPod, people started taking it serious and started putting like actual shows and production value. And I think that was a big switch in the podcasting game. And at that point, no wrestlers in the business were doing talking to wrestlers together, you know, like Talking Shop. And I started becoming obsessed with the comedians doing it. Comedy was very early to the podcasting game. Jimmy Pardo, Never Not Funny, is one of them. I started listening to one, Comedy Bang Bang. And then Mark Maron was, you know, and I think it was Mark who was just like, he was having these conversations with these comedians. And at the time, Mark Maron was not a successful comedian necessarily, but I could see him like rising up the ranks because the podcast was popular. And he had done so much time. He would tell these stories about being at the Comedy Store, being with Sam Kinison. And like what I felt to him was just like a road dog. Couldn't get his big break, had been doing it for so long, knew everybody. And at that point, 2010, I'd been in 10 years. You know, I'd had that awful stint with WWE, but I'd been to Japan, I'd been to Puerto Rico, I'd been to Europe so many times. I had all these relationships, and my generation was now the generation basically making it to TV, although I wasn't necessarily becoming that kind of star. So it was just like, I had all these ins, and I know you can relate to this, of just like, well, not relating to the failing at the WWE part, but
no, but just wanted to diversify yourself, right?
But it was also, it was the idea is that we knew everybody in every locker room because we just we hit the pavement. All we wanted to do was wrestle. I'm speaking for you. All I wanted to do was wrestle. You know what I'm saying? And so because of that, because we traveled so much, we just knew everyone in every locker room. So when we talked to people, we had these relationships and we could tell the story. And I did a documentary called The Wrestling Road Diaries, which was kind of like one of the first kind of let's grab a camera and show what independent wrestling is about. And in that, we were showing like there was like people got a glimpse of what sitting in a locker room and hanging out was like about. Mm-hmm. And I loved that movie. I'm very proud of it. I ended up doing two more. But also I was like, these conversations in the locker room should be out there. The safe ones, you know, there's stuff that isn't right. for the fans, but there is stuff for the fans. And so I just knew that they should get out. And that's kind of a lot of the emphasis of the podcast when it started. Yeah.
You know, kind of going back, like you said, you started a few years earlier than me, but that was around the time when it started. I remember the first podcast I ever did was, I had a publicist at the time.
Do you want me to think who I think? Well, I don't know, because I think Carolla made Stone Cold do his podcast. And so I was going to say maybe Carolla for you.
It was Carolla.
It was Carolla.
So, and you go to his house. I don't know if you've ever done the show, but he's got a house in Burbank that doubles as his studio. And I remember telling my publicist, like, why are you sending me to do a podcast? Because I was under the assumption that podcasts were just fan-based. And the typical, you know, doing it in your mom's basement type thing, but just somebody doing it from their house. Almost like if you're in the 60s, a ham radio mm-hmm. operator.
Well, you couldn't make it on,
right.
on radio.
So you start a podcast.
You'll do your
I'm
own
like, well, who's
thing.
Listening to this?
Yeah.
And then I go to Carolla's studio, and on the wall, it said Guinness Book of World Records, most downloads for a podcast. And at the time, it was something like 500 million downloads. And I was like, are you effing kidding me? I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And that's where I started thinking, once again, podcasts are not the wave of the future. Podcasts are happening now.
Yeah.
And this usually when that happens to me, I'm doing it with NFTs right now. Like, I want to jump on it early so that when it blossoms, I'll have been one of the first. And that's where the podcast idea came up with assist from Stone Cold, who had started right before me.
Yeah.
And one last thing that I'll say is my mindset always was, I know what it's like to get interviewed.
Yes.
And get asked the same question yeah. over and over and over again. I know what it's like when someone's trying to dig for the dirt. I know what it's like when someone comes in with a list of questions and you know they're not paying any attention to what I'm saying because they're just thinking about the next question.
Yeah.
So I just want this to be a conversation. I'm going in there with nothing, every time with nothing, and we'll see what happens.
I would do these interviews before my podcast, and I loved long form, and I wanted to open up. Mm. So I would like try to open up to these people on the telephone, and I could tell that they were doing something else. You know, and they were thinking of the next question. And for me, you know, I was just like, where is the person who's going to have this conversation with me? Mm-hmm. And then I realized like, oh, it's me who will have it with others.
And because you have to listen.
Yeah.
Right. That's the secret to it. And that's when I started getting into it. I remember one of my earlier guests, and it's great to this day, he doesn't do podcasts. And he'll just say, the only podcast I do is my buddy, Chris Jericho, William Shatner. Some reason the stars aligned and he actually came very early on, and we were talking about something. I mentioned that I had a rent a car and something happened with the rent a cars. What do you had a rent a car? So do you always rent cars? And what's the con? Like, he was listening to what I was saying as a guest and then coming back at me with really interesting questions about some little bit of detail that I didn't even think mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized this is what he does to keep himself interested, because he's answered 10,000 questions about Captain Kirk.
Imagine how many things.
Right. And I was like, wow. So I really try and pull the William Shatner and listen to where something that maybe somebody hasn't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they'll enjoy doing Talk is Jericho.
Yeah.
All right, Colt. So when you started The Art of Wrestling, what was your strategy as an interviewer?
It was listening and, yeah, whatever someone kind of has to say and going with it. I'm always interested. I love origin stories. And I know it's kind of cliche in the terms of like, we've answered all the questions. Where did you train? Right? Like, we can say, where did you train? But I also love improv, and I know you've done improv training. So like I started doing some improv training in Chicago when I started my podcast, and it really clicked because I want to know where you train, but you're going to tell me that answer. And then it blossoms out. We start a scene from that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's not just where did you train, but that's someone saying the, what is it? Hey, I need a word or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cole and Chris are at a taxidermy shop and they're on their first date. Go.
Right. And you so know? And so that was it. That just started the conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not, I do want to know where you train, but then we start blasting them out. And so I also felt at the time I'd just been released by WWE. I felt that like I had this crazy story. I didn't, you know, in my heart, I felt that wrestling was trying to push me away, but I didn't want to be done with wrestling. And as I started getting more successful with my podcast and my show and traveling more, you know, I wanted to hear other people's stories, I guess, kind of like mine, or I felt everyone had that kind of story. So that was always a big part of my show, was overcoming. What did you overcome? And even the big stars, when I had on the people that you think aren't over, you know, we just look at these people on TV and we just assume they've always had everything. Then we find out all the little things that make them people. And then, of course, makes you relatable. I guess I'd like your take on this a little bit, because I remember doing a bunch of pitches while I was in developmental, and I just kept on hearing that Vince McMahon likes larger than life, larger than life. And I just kept on saying, my selling point is I'm not larger than life. I'm everybody's friend. People enjoy me as a person, as a fan. I liked Mick Foley because I saw him jump, you know, like,
yeah,
the back of the tapes. That's what I was doing.
Right.
You know? And so I know there's two different aspects of it, but I grew up thinking I would never make it to WWF because I would never look like those people. And so I didn't think, like, you can put me on TV and I would look like, I'm not going to look like John Cena or Batista. It's just not who I am. But I know I can, everywhere I've gone, I've gotten over with, you know, and I've weirdly made money in this, in the industry.
Well, yeah. And that's something that we'll talk about too, is that you were one of the first guys, much like the Young Bucks, that were able to create kind of an industry, a Colt Cabana industry, where you didn't have to be in WWE to make money. And I don't know how much money you made or how little money you made, but you were always in the business and always talked about. So you must have been doing fairly well. But you were one of the first guys where it's like, I think maybe, and you can tell me this, when you got released, that maybe you're thinking, I don't want to have to worry about being in a company ever again.
Yeah, I said, well, first thing I did was put a resume on Monster.com.
Really?
And like the saddest, of course.
I mean, you work your way up to WWE and then it's done.
Yeah. I mean, that's what society says, yeah. Right? I talk with some friends, like I have a friend who was in SNL and did one season and got fired. Mm. And it's just like,
who is it?
Brooks Whelan.
Oh, I don't even remember. What year was that, I wonder?
Man, maybe 2005 or something like that. Yeah. And it's just like, I equate it to like, imagine being a sketch, whatever.
That's a great point, yeah.
And that's where you want to go. And it's crazy. The more you think about it, Lorne is Vince.
They're so I mean, the MacGruber thing totally made me realize that. They are so similar in personalities, in aura, and in the fact they both created these pop culture phenomenons basically from nothing.
Was he on set for the...
Yes, he was.
Really?
And he sounds exactly like Dr. Evil.
Like Mike Myers, yeah.
Yeah, Mike Myers' impersonation of Lauren is Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
And he hates it. He doesn't think he does.
I'd imagine.
Yeah.
You're very funny. I really enjoyed your line delivery. That's what he said.
Yeah. Is that your best work right there?
I can do work.
Should we edit that out?
So go ahead. So you're talking about being a sketch comedian.
Well, getting to SNL, that's where you get to. And then it's just all, you know, our industry has told us it's all down. You know, I did the shows with King Kong Bundy and Brutus Beefcake on the way down. Those were the shows that I did on the way up. And now it's not like they were going to hire me back. You know, I was on my way down. So the first thing I did was put my resume on Monster. You know, I have a college degree, and I was just like, well, I'll try to take bookings, but eventually I guess I'll have to do a real life. But then also, as everything started kind of building and as I started really taking so much from comedy, I started doing a sketch show or a YouTube show that I took kind of an idea, just the basic idea, a YouTube show. And I made the documentary, which was based off of the Comedians of Comedy. My YouTube show was based off of this little thing called Puddin' by Eddie Pepitone. He's doing these little short videos. So me and Marty DeRosa, we would go and we'd film 10 things in 2 hours, and then we'd make 1 minute videos, and they'd come out every week. And then the podcast was kind of, you know, a lot of it was inspired by comedy. And then as it started building, I realized that, like, I don't want anyone to fire me anymore. I want to be the only person that could fire myself. And I want to have so many different boxes because I put all my eggs in this WWE basket, and I just wanted all different boxes. So if one box goes away, I have six more. Mm. And that was my mentality, to try to survive. And as it started getting really good, you know, like, I knew, like, if I was fired at 29, I think at 30 and a half or 31, I realized, like, oh crap, I'm doing good. And there is longevity in this. And so I knew I would have, you know, I knew I didn't have to take the job on Monster. And I knew I could do the indies. I was making pretty crazy money. You know, at the height of, I think, my podcast, I know I was making more than mid-carders in WWF, which I know is wild for people to hear. But also, I think I was wrestling more than them. I was on the road about 200 days a year. I would just take everything and I would do everything. And I had this mentality of, like, because the popularity of the podcast and being on the internet and all of this stuff, merchandise moved. People wanted to come to have an experience. So I didn't really need to get paid the most for a show. I just needed to get to that merch table, mm-hmm. you know? And I loved the wrestling. And I have so much, you know, pride in professional wrestling. And I think I have such a weird and different style. And if it doesn't fit some places, like, I know that I enjoy doing it. It makes me happy. And I know there's a pocket of people that it does make happy. So the art of it, I loved, but also to make a living, if I could get to the show, if I can get to a table, if I can meet the fans who have come that want to meet me. And it's weird how we look at, like, how I look at it in terms of, like, the promoter is, you know, the promoter is paying me for the job, but they also get the, you know, it's cheap because now, like, the fan pays for the ticket and they get that money. The promoter does. And then I get the money of the meet and greet or whatever. And I start, I'm very analytical when it comes to all this stuff. So, like, I really break it down, probably to a detriment to myself, but that's kind of how my process worked.
But it was also too, because the podcast was so popular, that then brings up your name value for the shows. They're working in a symbiotic function. There's a word for you.
Yeah. Like, I, like, that's, you know, I not necessarily draw in an arena, but I'm going to draw in front of, you know, 2 to 1,000 people or whatever it might be, and I can bring 100, 200 people or whatever it is. And if you're a promoter,
that's money.
You know, Andy Quinlan in England in RevPro, I mean, I probably went to England every other month for 3 years, and he was just like, why would I not book you?
Right.
He's like, you know, the podcast, they're coming over. And it did, like, I boosted his business a little bit because no one was bringing me over overseas. And we kind of figured it out, and it became kind of a model. And I, you know, the brother thing is, like, I've been working for him for so long. I knew him since I, you know, first started going over to England in 23. Mm-hmm. So I would work cheap for him, but I would make so much money because the UK fans, you know, like, they liked me and enjoyed me, but I lived in Chicago.
Right.
So
you make it more on the back end when you do go there.
Yeah.
Just to quickly touch on it, because we've never spoke on Talk Is Jericho before. Just quickly tell me, because the name in WWE was Scotty Goldman.
Yeah.
Tell me kind of what the concept of that was, because there's a couple things I remember about it, but it was very quick cup of coffee as far as I can remember. But,
oh, I'd love to know what you remember about it.
Well, what I remember of it, well, first of all, tell me what the gimmick was and what it was supposed to be.
I mean, it was, first, I was just in developmental for too long.
And, in FCW
and
whatever?
In OVW and FCW, mm-hmm. and, like, I don't say this in any braggy way, but I was like, I was been told, like, I'm too good for developmental.
Right. You've been working too long to be stuck here with these
right.
guys.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to move you up. And I think it was a sink or swim thing. Or, you know, it must have been. I don't know. Yeah. There was a bunch of us. Me, Spears, Kizarni, Atlas DeBone, who was Ricky Ortiz. Right? We just, it was kind of like a, it was a wild thing.
Booker T. Loving it. Atlas DeBone.
Oh, man.
Gosh, I hadn't thought of that name in years.
Yeah, yeah. It's a, and it's so crazy because now, you know, there was this time this year where those guys are all getting released, and, like, you know, some make it and some don't. It's so wild that the number of people who just, like, sign that contract, put their heart in that, and it's just like, out you go.
Yeah.
And from, like, a lower level too. And I guess it's part of the business, but, and I was that part of the business. It's like, well, let's see if it works. But also, I was just brought up, they changed my name on the day. I was going to be Colt Cabana, but then they were like, I guess, you know, we want to own whatever your name is. Vince asked if I was Jewish. This is all hearsay. I'm not really sure. Vince asked if I was Jewish.
Now, why would he ask if you're Jewish?
In the meeting. It had been brought up.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and I, it's funny how wrestling works, because I had thought to myself, like, what do I have that other people don't have? Because I'm just an average-looking dude. Like, I'm very aware of that, you know? And I always would say to myself, like, on the indies, it's, I knew I had 10 minutes. I knew I had 15 minutes. I would wow them with my charm.
And tell
my,
your story.
My wrestling story. But what can I, in this world that I know is different, and so I would bring up that I'm Jewish because there wasn't a thing that was highlighted. And it's new. I knew it was something different about me. Mm-hmm. So I'd been brought up. And so I, you know, let's call him Goldman, I guess, was whatever. That's what it was. Your new name's Scotty Goldman. My first match was with Brian Kendrick. Brian was, they were getting him ready to wrestle Triple H or something. Mm-hmm. He had Ezekiel with him. All these names we think about that, right?
Yeah, it's just come and go.
They don't stick, yeah. And that was it.
What I remember about the gimmick, and like I said, it was that it was almost like the Batman bam pow little kind of boxes that look a little bit more like expletive, and it said like gold man.
Yeah. I mean that was mine.
Well, of course it was. But what were you trying to do? Like there was gold man and you had like other names on there too.
Fun man, I don't know, dude man.
You're trying to go with the man, the Goldman.
Anything. Right. I was trying to go with anything. And then I think I had a gold singlet made. And then I remember, and this is how that place works. You know way more than I do. Shelton Benjamin was the gold standard.
Right.
And he got, it's funny because in my mind, he got very mad that I was trying to do some kind of gold thing. And it's like, they named me Gold Man. You're the gold standard. And then years later, I toured Noah with him, Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan. And I realized like, oh, he wasn't being a dick or he wasn't mad at me. That's just kind of who he is.
Mm-hmm. He's got that kind of
dry.
Yes.
And I can only, the way I thought about Shelton Benjamin at that point in my career, because I was like, everyone was kind of nice, but screw that guy. I didn't, you know, I said that to myself and my friends.
Yeah.
And then later tour with him and Noah and realize what a good guy this guy is. The number of people who have been hated in wrestling, just that situation, had I not toured with him in Japan,
I think it's because they're a product of their environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I don't even think he was mad at me. I think he just said like a snide remark in passing. In his mind, it was like nothing, like Goldman, I'm gold standard. Yeah. And I took it as like, you've got heat. I'm going to bury you to all the writers. And that's just how minds work. But it is from that environment, of course. Yeah.
So when you started doing your podcast, and once again, it's so interesting to me. It's much like listening to Metallica in 1983. They were so heavy. But now you go and you hear it at sports games. Like you would never hear a Metallica. Like it was offensive to listen to. Same thing with podcasting. Now in 2021, everyone's open, everyone's talking. What was it like in 2010 when you were trying to get guys to talk long-form secrets of the business?
Yeah, well, I mean, just like, I wasn't really going for dirt necessarily.
Stories?
It was just, just long-form, giving somebody the ability and the platform to talk. But the key was they were all my friends. And if you look at that first 100 episodes of mine, they were just all my friends who I was on the road constantly with. We were talking these talks. And I think they just all had trust in me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another part of it is that another thing is like I didn't send the headlines to the websites of like this guy says this thing. I just did my show. And like I wasn't worried about that. Looking at it now, 10 years later, like there's so much money in that stuff that I was just so stupid. I don't know if I was stupid or I wasn't, you know, I'll take that back. I don't think I was stupid because I was just doing a show with my friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I guess as a businessman, I could clip these things and do whatever, but it's not really what I wanted to do. And so, yeah, they were just all my friends and we were just talking. I think I did a two-parter with Regal very early and he was so open and so great. You did one with him, I think, right?
Yeah, a few times.
Yeah. And I think that was like one of the first real like ones that kind of popped for my show where mm-hmm. people, I think, started listening to it regularly. And that was, you know, 111 episodes or something. And so, you know, it's such a...
Yeah.
And luckily, I didn't know how to get my numbers at first.
Mm.
So I was just doing it. And I saw people connecting to it, and I saw people coming to shows and buying merch. So
that's your financial gain from it. That's your profit.
But that's how I knew that it was worth doing, and I knew that people were enjoying it. And then later when you find out the numbers, you're like, good Lord. And then I think also the kind of you said before where we think like, oh, who listens to these things? You know, one of the early good ones had like 100,000 listeners, and then I remember being at like a hockey game and looking at the arena and seeing that there was 20,000 people in the mm-hmm. arena, right? They make that announcement.
Yeah.
And then you just say to yourself, like five of these buildings are all sitting on the train or working out. And that really put a lot in perspective, I think.
Who was your first guest?
Daivari. Yeah. Yeah. It was after a Ring of Honor show. Generico and Steen were just there on the other bed.
The mysterious Generico. Identity never been revealed to this day.
Yeah. And it's...
I always have to say that whenever his name is mentioned, just so people know. We have no idea.
But, you know, you ride with him because he's a good wrestler.
Right, yeah.
We like good wrestlers.
He's got his mask on for the whole ride, but whatever.
So annoying. Yeah, yeah. And it smells a little, the mask. It smells. I don't think he washes it, which is kind of a shame. And those are the personalities I'm sure you know from doing the podcast. Mm. Like, Daivari likes to talk. He's open. He's got a fun story. You know, his dad owned a pizza place. I knew I was involved in his story as it happened, right? Like when he drove himself to OVW trying to become, you know, get a spot somehow.
Right.
I mean, we were on the phone. I was talking to him. We would talk through these things. We would be on these small indie shows. And so, yeah, I thought Daivari was a great first guest.
When did you start? Like, for me, my concept was never just for wrestling. It was going to be a little bit of everything. It still is to this day. And like I said, you get to certain levels. Like, it's great having your friends on. Because one of my favorite things about a podcast is, like, for example, you and I work together. You're always doing what you got to do. I'm always doing what I got to do. Unless you actually take the time to sit down and talk, you really don't talk a lot. So this gives you an excuse to have an hour-long, you know, catch up with your friend. Mm. And it also gives you a reason to meet other people that you've never met, or maybe, you know, idolize them or whatever it could be. What was kind of the first guest that you had for you where you, like, couldn't believe that you were actually talking to this person?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. Two names kind of come to my mind when you say that is Demolition Axe. No, sorry. Demolition Smash. I've always wanted to have Axe on. Have you had Bill Eady on?
I have not had Bill Eady on.
God, I think he...
I have not.
I mean, I've kind of stopped doing my show.
The Art of Wrestling.
The Art of Wrestling. Yeah. I do have a new podcast, yeah. Wrestling Anonymous.
We'll discuss that.
But I feel there was times where, like, he would have done it with me. Mm. And he's someone... That's a fascinating
That's
person.
An old school brother, though. It's hard to get what I'm... By point. Like, I remember Arn was just in here. We did a show about Bobby Eaton.
Yeah.
Who, like, you informed me, had passed away, as we knew.
Also, I was like, oh, I hope he laughs at this. I don't know if it's the right time to joke.
It's very dry. And I was like, yes. Got to know that Bobby passed away. So Tony and Arn did. I remember the way back, probably 2014-15, I asked Arn to do my show. And he's like, I don't feel comfortable with that. And there's still a couple of people that don't want to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm imagining it was a lot worse back then, so because nobody was doing podcasts. So to get Demolition Axe would be kind of really old school, brother.
But I got Smash and Ted DiBiase. And Ted
Smash is Darso, right?
Smash is Darso. What a great guy.
Yeah, the best guy.
Everyone oh, my Darso, God. Yeah. That Minnesota charm. Yeah. It is there.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess you would know. Like, you're close.
That's the truth.
Right. Yeah. And... It was through, like, Ted DiBiase was through, like, he was putting out this movie and he was trying to publicize it. And so I was like, this is my end. I'm going to do this. I'm doing this Heroes and Legends thing with him. That's the thing, too, is I was the way, and I'm interested in if that's how you look at it and how you do it. And first of all, I still don't know how. I am so happy not to know that I have to collect one of these a week. That's wild. But I would look at my shows, who's on my shows, and... Yeah, and I had this convention, and I think Ted DiBiase was promoting this movie, and so I got to sit down with him. And a lot, it's hard because, like you were saying before, like, we don't have questions, but I like to think I know about wrestling, but I'm always questioning myself, like...
It's always good to go to Wikipedia and do a quick read.
Quick breeze.
Yeah,
a quick
I like to
breeze
do that.
Down. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I like to do that.
Yeah. I remember you had Bruno on, too, and I had set up with Bruno... I was freaking out. Like, I just don't want to disrespect this man by, you know, only going 20 minutes and not having an information. I remember talking to Michael at High Spots being like, you know, he was guiding me through because he was working with Bruno a lot at the time. And he's just like, oh, he likes to talk. You'll be fine.
What a great guest.
And he did. Right. And he was great. I also, a fun story from that one was, at the time, he was 80 years old, so I went and bought, like, a microphone stand, like, thinking he wouldn't be able to hold a microphone. And he's like, I don't need this. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. You're the strongest man of all time.
The cool thing with my Bruno show, and it's funny because I've mentioned a couple times because people have been asking me, we're in Pittsburgh right now, saying, do you got any great, what's your favorite Pittsburgh? And Bruno agreed to do my show, but only from his favorite Italian restaurant called Rico's. And usually when you do the podcast, we want it silent so you don't have audio or worries or, you know, distractions. But he would do it from the restaurant. I thought, well, I'll do my best. So I set up my rig right in the middle of Bruno's favorite table. And everyone's eating and there's murmuring, there's talking. But I'll tell you what, the ambiance for that show Once it settles in, it becomes background noise. It was unfucking believable because he was so comfortable in his element. He told the best. We went about 2 hours, and I usually only like to go about an hour. But I was like, that's why he wanted to come here.
Yeah,
because he wanted to be comfortable.
And that's why one of the things I love about podcasting is that we'll live on forever.
Yeah.
And that's the best. Yeah. It's just like this. We're now part of the archives of wrestling.
Yeah.
You can go back in 20, 30, 40, 50 years and we can hear these conversations. And then also we hear Bruno Sammartino eating at a restaurant with Chris Jericho. It's so cool.
So, Colt, when you do your podcasts, do you have a certain time limit or a format that you like to follow?
After years, it comes to a pattern. Usually at 40 or 45, I'd like to wrap up. Very early, I would be like, I need to be I can't go long. The whole show can't be longer than an hour. I wanted to like set it that. And then you realize, like, who's telling you that it can't be longer than an hour?
Yeah.
You know, as a fan, my kind of key to my whole career is do the stuff that you would want to be a fan of, right? It's how I wrestle. It's the podcast that I made. It's something that I think I would want to listen to if I wasn't in wrestling. And so, like, I didn't want to, people were putting out 3-4 hour podcasts.
Yeah.
And I remember like being like, well, I'm not going to listen to this, even if it's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to listen to this too long.
That's one that's very, very surprised me with Joe Rogan, which how successful he is. He's at the top of the game right now in podcasting, but his shows are 3 hours long. I'll listen to James Hetfield on there because I'm a big Hetfield fan. But other than that, like, it takes a lot to get me to spend three hours doing anything.
But if that's what he likes.
And it's obviously working.
You're allowed to do it. Yeah, it's the great thing. Right. He's his own boss.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't even think Spotify can tell him what to do necessarily.
Well, can he just get $100 million from whatever company?
But it's also they're just licensing it out.
Yeah.
It's like he makes the shots.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And so if he wants to put on a 3-hour show, he can do it.
How did you end up? You mentioned at first you didn't really know your numbers or whatever, but as you continued forward, where did you get your revenue? Did you have an advertising company? Did you start working with a platform?
So this kind of not ties in with you and I, but I befriended the Sklar brothers, who I know I listened to their show.
You're
and I know
the
you
show,
did
yeah.
their show. Yeah. And
I'm not even sure how I got to know them.
That's
all it is. Now you meet someone, you go, hey, I got a podcast. You want to do it?
Maybe. Yeah. And I was in LA. There was a company called Earwolf who was very early. And I did the Sklar Brothers podcast.
I can envision the Earwolf building.
Yeah.
You probably did it.
Yeah.
I can see it in my head.
Well, they moved a couple of times. They started now they're Stitcher. So Stitcher's bought them out. It's so crazy how podcasting
Yes, it's just gone through the roof.
Wild. And I did their podcast, and then their numbers were very good. Not to brag. No. You know, like, but there was a lot of movement from me and like social media. And then the owner, a guy named Jeff Ehrlich, who was the owner of Earwolf.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, tell me about your numbers and everything. And then I was like, oh, I don't know. And I looked it up and then I gave him my numbers. And he's like, we're starting this thing called Midroll, which does advertising. And at first I was like, listen, man, I don't want to do Adam and Eve because that's what's on Corolla.
Blue Chew.
I do. You know, I was just like, I have more integrity than that.
Yeah, right.
And then he told me what I could make, and I was like, holy, like, yes, Adam and Eve, whatever.
My favorite product.
Unreal, yeah. I didn't know there was that kind of money.
Agreed.
In it. It blew my mind. And the great thing was, is I had been doing it for whatever, 2.5 years, out of pure, yes, business reasons, but I just loved doing it. I really loved doing it. And I remember Bruce Pritchard I had a conversation with him before he started his show, and he was just asking me about podcasting. I was like, you can't make it a chore. You have to love to do it.
Right.
And he said that kind of always stuck with him. And so then, yeah. So, I mean, I started working with Midroll and they started Hulu Plus was one of my first sponsors. And for me to be in my shitty studio apartment in Chicago, you know, whatever, you know, National TV Wrestling doesn't want me. And then, you know, I'm sitting in my apartment going like, this episode's brought to you by Hulu Plus. And knowing like a good check is coming to me and I'm making good money wrestling. I really felt like this like underground kind of like.
Well, dude, I'll tell you right now, you are a pioneer in the podcasting business. You really are. And I don't know, influential. to when I started kind of, because like I said, I knew Scotty Goldman and I kind of knew your name, but then I'm hearing Colt Cabana, Art of Wrestling, Colt's doing that. I was like, this guy's really cornered this market,
man. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's really cool to kind of hear that because like you mentioned, you have to love to do it. But because you came in early on, because now, dude, you know this, there's over a million, and that's not wrestling exaggeration, over a million podcasts.
Yeah.
So when you started in 2010, you were able to build your fan base so that you were worth this type of money, because now people go, well, who am I supposed to listen to? Everyone's got one. Mm-hmm. For Jericho, well, we've been there for 8 years. For Cabana, we've known him for 10 years. We'll check those ones out mm-hmm. first. And that's where the advertisers and the podcast platforms see that.
Somebody was saying the other day, like, at first we were like, yeah, like definitely Jericho, Austin, people would be like, are you mad that they have podcasts? They'd be like, no, like now people will understand what podcasts are and they'll check everyone. But now it's like, oh, there's too many. That's no, you don't.
But you know what makes me laugh though? It's like I've hosted a lot of award shows and stuff like that. And they'll bring in some other guys. It's like, oh, they'll bring in Sammy Hager this year or whatever. And it's like, doesn't quite work. It's hard to host a show mm-hmm. in front of a crowd on a podcast, but nobody realizes that until they try and host one. And that's why, yes, there's a million, but out of those, there's a very small group that are really mm-hmm. good interviewers. And those are the ones that people flock to. And those are the ones that last.
Yeah. But it's also so cool that someone can try it and fail.
Yeah.
That the barrier of entry is very minimal, that if, you know, you can have that opportunity. And that's kind of why it was like, you know, like, WWE didn't want me or whatever, and it was like, well, you know, I'm allowed to do podcasting, mm-hmm. you know, so I love that anyone can try, and that's why I think all this, you know, like even like TikTok's so big now, and just but YouTube shows and podcasting, the barrier of entry is like anyone could do it, the cream will rise.
Yeah.
And I felt as someone in wrestling who was rising on the independents, who didn't get a chance to rise nationally, you know, there wasn't a national person saying like yes or no. It was just, I went right to the people. And I always kind of said that, I always used, this isn't fair to Carlito or Masters, you know, but I always said like they were on TV and then, you know, they go and do their independent shows and like, they're not, I'm trying to do something weekly. They had their weekly advertisements. And then once they're off that show and then they're doing independence, they're not being weekly advertised anymore.
Right.
And they needed WWE for that weekly advertisement, yes. But they were in WWE, so it's not like they were going to go to independent shows. Mm. So, you know, my show was my weekly advertisement. That was my USA Network, but I didn't need a wrestling show and I didn't need a network. I just need to upload something to an internet.
Yeah. And do it with consistency.
Yeah.
That's what people expect. They want to hear it. If it's Thursday at 9, you better not miss a week.
Right. It was my weekly show. Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting too, because that's something that Steve told me, because Austin once again brought me to Podcast One, and one of his biggest pitches at the time, it was ad rev share. So whatever advertisements we're getting, I get a share of it. But he's like, most importantly is you get a platform to promote whatever you want to promote and talk about whatever you want to talk about for a whole hour. And that really does become your machine. Like I have the Jericho podcasting machine where whatever it might be, people will respond. And I've done that with my own stuff. And I've done that with Terrifier. I don't know if you're a horror movie fan, but there's a movie called Terrifier that was just a little underground horror movie that I was really focusing on. And now it's become, not just because of me, because it's great, it became a thing. But a lot of that had to do with Jericho. DDP Yoga, Ask Page, because I was always promoting it because he was a sponsor, mm-hmm. it got over. Mm-hmm. So you have this platform and people start to trust what you're saying and believe what you are pitching to them. And that is worth its weight in gold.
I mean, there's many reasons why I started. I was talking about the influences, but also I was putting out this documentary mm-hmm. and I remember the Wrestling Road Diaries still up at coltmerch.com. But I remember being like, I'm going to have to go do a bunch of podcasts. And again, boy, do I hate doing those.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I just had my own show, and I strategically started it before, like strategically started my podcast, you know, I think it was 6 months before, knowing that like I would build it up to the release of this movie. And I pictured always doing it longer, but I knew that was a key element of I need to produce this movie. or I need to promote this movie because I did it all single-handedly by myself. And it stars Daniel Bryan before he went to WWE. It's pretty wild. Before he went to WWE, it was like he was getting tested to see if he could go there. And then like while the movie came out, I think it was when that Justin Roberts, like, you know, like, it was pretty wild, the timing, all of it. But I just knew that I was like, I got to put up a list. I got to build myself a list of all these shows I got to go on that I don't want to go on. And I kind of said to myself, like, well, if I was the show that I would go on, it would be so much better. And yeah, the befores and afters. Yeah. The intro and the outros kind of became my infomercial for this documentary.
Yeah, you don't have to say the same story 10 times. You just come to my podcast to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Colt. You said that the Art of Wrestling podcast is on hiatus, except for, of course, on the Jericho Cruise. But why is the reason for that?
I slowed down, but they're all still up. And, you know, they have ads in them and stuff. So, like, the whole past archive.
What they do now is with the archives, they put in the new ads. So, it's constantly updating.
It's a great business model. I wish I had that years ago. Yeah. But, again, like, you can't look in the past. You just got to move forward. Yeah. I felt that I had talked to a lot of people. I felt that this idea of a podcast was a little oversaturated. And I just, I don't know if, you know, like, I wasn't the same guy that I was in my early 30s or late 20s. And I just, I don't know. I think I felt it kind of had come to an end. And I changed it for like a year and a half to a documentary style podcast, which I really liked too, but it didn't like pop the numbers or anything. It just was what it was. And I was just like, I'd like to take a break from this. Like having the pressure of having to ask somebody every single week,
yeah.
Right? It's wild.
Or twice a week.
For you, unreal, unreal. And then when the documentary podcast, I started doing like, because I was still traveling so much and wrestling so much, and I would like bring my, so I would use like this mic that attached to my iPhone, and I would like kind of put in people's faces, not put in people's faces, like, hey, can I, the same way like Ethan does for his vlog, it's like, hey, like when you watch it, you're like, this is great, but no behind the scenes, he's got to be like, can I put you on my vlog?
Right.
And it becomes a lot. And so I love the idea of going to be able to do these shows and not having to do
the
that
pressure,
anymore.
Yeah. I'm the same because I said coming here today, well, and not to mention talking about technical glitches, the one time you and I were going to do it in Miami, I forgot my ring, which is so Bush League. And I was like, oh, he's a pioneer of podcasting. He's going to think I'm a Bush League. And then, but today knowing like, okay, I've got the Bobby Eaton podcast. I got the Cole podcast. And it does add a lot of, I mean, I know they're going to be great because they're great stories, but still, we got to sit down. We got to get our timing right. Mm. There's people knocking at the door. You know, it's wrestling, live TV. Things could come up. They might need you. So there really is a lot to it other than just what you guys are hearing, just putting it all together. Because, yes, I have a producer, but 90% of it is just me hustling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
we're hustling.
God, I love the hustle, though. Yeah. I love it so much. Yeah. How many have you done at 2 a.m. when you were supposed to do it at 9 p.m., but you knew you'd need an episode for that week, right?
Right. I mean, I've always been pretty cognizant of, though, because I remember Steve telling me, like, man, I got no show for this week. I got to sit down with my wife. And I'm like, I don't ever want to be in that position.
Right.
So I banked them.
Yeah.
And I also do it, okay, like, this one is evergreen. Like, I got one, like, for example, Jake the Snake in AAA. He wanted to do one. So I got that. I can put it up whenever I want.
Yeah.
Where are you talking about? Like, for example, if it's the Bob Eaton, obviously I want to put that up closer sooner than later because he just passed away. Mm-hmm. So if I have some in the bank, it takes a lot of that pressure away. But you still got to keep putting them in the
bank.
Yeah.
But mine were always evergreen. Which
okay,
is
so, well, how many would you have? Would you bank
anywhere from like 3 to 8?
Gotcha. Okay.
Is kind of,
yeah.
And it brings back such like romantic memories of looking at my iTunes and knowing I labeled them. Yeah. I know nothing for anybody else, but I never wanted to do it with other people outside of wrestling. I really, very early on, I did one with Necro Butcher about The Wrestler, and I kind of regretted not just doing a regular Necro Butcher episode.
Yeah, just to hear his story.
Yeah.
And I've heard he's not a big podcaster, so to get him was good.
Well, this was, I mean, 2010. I think this is my 10th episode.
Right.
I promised him a case of beer. I bought him a case of beer. But yeah, so like I realized like, oh, I just want these evergreen episodes. I just want kind of like to tell the story. Mm-hmm. But I... You know, I'm not saying good or bad. I'm saying I didn't.
I got you.
Yeah. I didn't want.
But for me, like I said, because there's so much turnover, if there's something that comes up, then I'll jump on it. Mm-hmm. You know, like who can I talk to? Once again, I just did. Okay, Arn, obviously best friends with Bobby. Tony called all of his matches. They're both here. I know it's a Friday. We've got Rampage tonight. Arn's not working. Tony's not working. Yeah. Chris has an hour of commentary. It's going to be a better day to do it. Yeah. If I had a match, it's not a good day to do podcasts because it's a different vibe, right?
Yeah. And people want to, I get people. It's such good content and such good, and people need to hear this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I don't want to swing it to my show, but like.
No, please.
Well, I was going to say.
I want to talk about your new show.
Yeah. Because
that was what Art of Wrestling is on a slowdown, but you've got another passion show that's going on.
But right it's now. Like we have these platforms for people to hear these stories. So like Arn or whatever, I guess he wouldn't do any of their podcast, you know, but sometimes they would tell these stories on a place that might not be able to be signal boost that they wouldn't hear them.
Well, what's your new show called?
Wrestling Anonymous.
Wrestling Anonymous. So what's the concept of Wrestling Anonymous?
It's the fans calling in stories into a voice, a Google voice, or sending it me a memo. And it's a hotline show. And I'm kind of like, we hear their stories and then I kind of talk about them a little bit. And I thought it was going to be so much easier.
You got to edit.
I'm such an idiot.
Because you don't have a producer, right?
I do it all myself. But it's all based on the hustle too. It's just like, why would I pay somebody? I can do it. I have the time and I do. But when you have the time and you say that for, and you have 17 projects, you just split yourself
time
so
goes
much.
Away.
Yeah.
So it's actually a great idea. So would you have, a phone number set up that people can call?
Yeah.
And they'll leave a message?
Yes.
Talking about how wrestling influenced them? Or?
Well, I kind of have an idea of how I want the show to go. I like funny, obviously. So I love just weird. I mean, we've heard these stories. And I don't know if this has to be true with you, because for years wrestling fans were like, can I be on the Art of Wrestling? Right. I'm sure that I would. When are you going to have a fan on the Art of Wrestling? I hear it so much. And like, I don't know if they have a 60 minute story to tell, but they got a 2 minute story of a weird interaction with Jake the Snake and Triple H when he got drunk and threw a snake on somebody or something. You know, they're out there, man. Yeah. They're out there. So I edit them out. I take out the uhs and the ums. And, you know, I do, if there's like a weird opinion in the middle, sometimes I'll kind of cut it out and I just kind of get to the meat of it, which I think I've heard from people being like, I wasn't sure about the concept of this, but listening to it's really fun because, again, I know what I would want to listen to as a fan. So that's kind of what I'm putting into it. So there's, I like the fun. I like the weird. I like the obscure. I like the bizarre. I love the old timers. I love my era because we're all romantic for what we grew up on. So when someone calls in a story about Tito Santana or, you know, or something, like, to me, it hits my heart. Some fans will call and be like, I got this crazy story about the Young Bucks. And it's like, I see them every day. But, you know, so, but then there's also stories that, like, I love emotional stories. It's just, it's about storytelling, and it's hard to ask the fans to be storytellers, but some of them are great, and some of them maybe aren't the best storytellers, but the story they do have to tell is so wonderful. On a recent episode, it was episode 11, the security guard, it kind of hit on the internet a little bit. The security guard was talking about, he got called for somebody who was sitting on a ledge, and they were going to take their life. It was a five-story building. And he was the first one there. So he went up there and he started talking to him. The cops came, but the cops didn't interact because he was sitting on the ledge. And he noticed that the fan had a Bullet Club t-shirt on. And he was like, dude, Omega and Okada's in 2 days. And the guy's like, yeah, I was kind of wanting to see that. And then the guy gave him a two sweet. And the guy sitting on the ledge gave him a two sweet. And then he grabbed his wrist and pulled him off. And then he said, like, this kid hugged me for saving his life. It's just like.
That's heavy.
Heavy. And that story doesn't get played anywhere else, like maybe a Facebook post and maybe it hits, but
not on a platform like yours.
Like I have the opportunity to get this story out. It's so important. And again, when I talk about like you and Bruno Sammartino, you know, being able to listen to this in 30 years, you know, eating a plate of pasta, I think as I'm making it, I'm thinking about 30 years from now of these wonderful stories that will have a home, that will have a place forever. And yeah, it is out of love, and I love wrestling. And I think about, and I'd imagine how many different conversations you've had with yourself about why we love wrestling and what we love about wrestling. Because boy, it's changed over the years, you know. But I do know that I love just the generalness of wrestling, you know, and I love nostalgia about wrestling, and I just love feel good stuff about wrestling. And so this kind of hits all of it.
I've had my dad on probably 3 or 4 times now, and every time I see him, especially after this last year. I mean, your parents are only here for so long. My dad played in the NHL for 10 years, and he's got so many great stories. And I like having these because he's a great guest. He's a broadcaster, too. But I'll always have them, and my children will have them. Mm-hmm. Conversely, I also have my kids when they were little kids. They used to call Ash the fish expert because he was obsessed with fish, and we'd talk about fish. And I had my daughters talking about the books. I can go back and listen to when they were 7, 8 years old. So like you said, a podcast lasts forever. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool that you're doing your version of this because, once again, the wrestling, we started wrestling because we loved it and watching wrestling because it just took you to a different place, and it's a fun thing. And when you get in the business, sometimes it's work. But the basic crux of it is it's just supposed to be a good time. And it's cool that you're getting people on there to tell you why they're so influenced and why they love wrestling.
Mm-hmm. And this is what you were hitting on, but your kids have this to listen to you.
Great point.
8 years of whatever it is. I've thought about it, and because I have the equipment, and I don't know why I don't. I mean, my mother was a teacher, my father was a clothing salesman, you know, like, but for years I've been like, I should be sitting them down and just documenting them and just like doing a podcast only for me.
I'm sure you could have a great one that like Colt's parents tell the story.
I don't even, yes.
You know, I would listen to that. Like when you're a kid. Like,
right.
I jumped through the damn ceiling with this.
And when Rock and Randy Ricci kept me out to 3 a.m. doing ring work. And then my mom called the police because, you know, I was 18 and she didn't know where I was. She was fighting for my life. Yes. Those
you had me at Rock and Randy Ricci.
You're welcome.
So is there a hotline number that people can call the stories?
Oh, yeah. 87 Cabana 34. You call that up. Or the email is 87cabana34@gmail.com. And you can email a voice.
And how are you getting this out there? Just on your own social media?
Yeah.
Because you must have a lot of response if you're getting 11 shows or however many shows you have already.
Yeah. It feeds itself because it'll only go as long as they call in.
Yeah.
Which is a hard thing to do, and I was a little worried about. So at first I put something out like, hey, I'm doing I have a Patreon too. So at first I was like, I'm doing a thing I'm going to put together for my Patreon. I'd like it to be a long-term thing, but if not, this is a Patreon thing.
Right.
And then people called in, and I enjoyed the editing process, and I enjoyed kind of listening. I enjoyed listening to the stories, and it's great with AEW because I have a routine now. As I fly to the show, that's when I edit. I listen and edit to the calls.
You can do that on the plane.
Wonderful. It's so good.
Technology, yeah.
Yes. I mean, I used to edit. Dude, I used to edit my, you know, on the NOAA and the New Japan bus. That's when I would edit my podcast. It's just, and it's to think, like, at one time, Stan Hansen was getting so drunk on a New Japan bus. And
we watched Full Metal Jacket probably 8 times a tour of New Japan. I could have been editing podcasts.
Could have been editing podcasts.
We've seen it already. Chono loves it. He wants to watch it again.
I feel, yeah, there's some sense of pride that like I was touring the world, but also doing my little weird projects at the same time, kind of doing it all. Yeah.
You did my cruise a couple years ago, which was great. And you had just this hilarious, I don't even remember what you were calling it. What was it called?
I think it was Unprofessional Wrestling at the time, where me and Marty DeRosa would watch bad wrestling and we would do kind of jokes over.
It was like Mystery Science Theater, but for bad wrestling.
Yeah. And this is a show that I've done with Marty in America, all over America. It's also a show I did, not the last 2 years because of COVID, but I did at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival for 7 straight years.
Wow.
With a guy named Brendan Burns and now John Hastings. And one of my favorite things to do.
It was I always go and try and see a little bit of everybody's show because I'm so busy. But I came in the one place and you guys had the little weird looking Japanese little person in the Tokyo Dome 6-man match or something. And I was laughing. I was like, Chris, you got to go next time. I was like, I want to see more of this.
Yeah.
So I might have to have you do that again on the cruise next time. But just a great idea. What was the worst match that you ever saw where you were doing that?
Again, I did an Edinburgh Fringe Festival because Brendan Burns wanted a late night show and he had won like the whole Edinburgh Fringe Festival a couple years before. So he had a good following and I had done a live podcast in London with him and we had connected somehow. And he's like, would you like to come to this Fringe Festival? And I had been such a comedy fan and I'd heard on podcasts for years of people doing this festival. I was like, yes, I have to do this festival. And it's 30 straight days.
Wow.
It's 30 straight shows. So you do the show every single night. 30 straight nights.
Mm.
But I would do the show at midnight or 11 o'clock and I would just watch comedy all day long.
Yeah.
And I would get inspired. I loved it so much. And I'm, you know, a little sad that it's taken a break. I hope to be back next year. So at first we just kind of went in blind. And now over the years, I've refined it. I know how to do it. You kind of got to cut the matches. It can't be long matches. But at beginning, there was a beautiful well, in my mind, it was like the fans would love this one. Zeus versus Abdullah the Butcher from Puerto Rico. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
Oh, God. And I'm thinking like the two worst wrestlers. This is, and it's just they're just punching and kicking for 9 minutes.
They're giving you nothing.
There's nothing to play off. And like you said, years later, you learn, oh, little people in a Tokyo Dome, one's dressed like a robot, you know, one's dressed like Muda. There's a ref getting involved. There's just so much you could work with.
Yeah.
And at this point, not necessarily. And then there's another one with, it's this Indian dude in Japan. I think it's, I want to say Baba versus like this 7'3" Indian guy. Oh, another one that's rotten. Just, oh, I mean, they both can't move. Well, it's just wild. So I've learned over the years what the better clips are, and it's a very refined show, and I really enjoy doing it. It's just the mixture. Again, I love the mixture of, you know, my heart is wrestling. So like, you know, I remember when I started taking improv classes, I started doing stand up and people were like, oh, you're going to move away. It's just like, no, like I'm looking to mix all these worlds together. I love comedy, but I love wrestling. So like, let's, you know, and I think that's my niche that I've made, you know, is this mixture of whatever it is. But like, I don't try to shy away from wrestling. I love it.
Last question for you. Who is, and it might be hard to pick one, some of your favorite podcast guests that you've had, and then your worst guest. And if you don't want to give a name, I'll give you my worst guest.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't. I had some bad ones, but
my worst one was Mike Tyson because he wouldn't talk. And I was like, Mike, you understand that you agreed to be in a podcast. And I thought, like,
he has a podcast now.
I know. And I said, like, we've had enough experiences where I, you know, we'll get through this pretty quick. And finally, he just stopped talking. I was like, I got to fill 30 minutes. I'm going
to
just tell Mike Tyson stories now.
That's
what I had to do because I need 50 minutes or 45 minutes. And he just was giving me nothing.
That's wild.
Yeah. I think he might have been in a little bit of an altered state.
That's so funny that he has a podcast now.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I just want to go on his show next time and just sit there and not say anything.
Right. But he's got a guy.
To help him with that.
Yeah, that just reminds me of, like, I remember Piper started a podcast, but he had that Steve Simone, I think.
And then he had Earl. He had an Earl.
Yeah. He's a comedian. You're right. The guys, it's so funny because I'm not going
to
name the names, but
the
people that who weren't the best ones were people that were very outgoing as wrestlers and in the ring. And it was just like, they didn't know how to translate it to talking. It was so wild to me that would happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I did a two-parter with Piper in Indianapolis, and he was so sweet. And then I realized I brought up the half painting of his face with bad news.
Yeah.
And as I was saying it, like, I didn't, that's how I guess ignorant I was. Like, I didn't even realize the racial undertones and that was like a hard, you know, like a hard hitting. Like, I was just so curious.
Right.
Because it's my childhood.
But then you realize in 2013 or 14,
right,
it might not be something that he wants to talk about.
And yeah. And he did. And then, like, you know, he's like, you know, like, you got to ask these questions. I was like, wait, what? That's a WrestleMania. I remember it from my memory. Wanted to talk about it. And then, like, as I was doing it, I was thinking.
And now he's thinking, oh, he just wants the controversy.
Yeah, but he was so sweet and he was willing to.
I wish I had Roddy. I never had him.
Oh, really? He was so nice.
Yeah.
I had Johnny. I love British wrestling. I love it so much. I went to England in 2004 to do the Butlins camps and stuff. And I just somehow weirdly fell in love with the world of sports style of wrestling. And Johnny Saint came over to do a show, and I remember he was doing Chikara, and Sarah Del Rey, who is now a trainer at WWE, she was like talking to Johnny Saint about my show, and she was like, hey, you should do a show. And he's like, yeah, sure. I was like, what? Right? Because I didn't want to ask him to do the pack, but he agreed to do it. And that was,
you know, it's funny, when we had our match last summer, I watched some of your matches just to get a little sense and a feel and get some ideas. And I said, oh, he's obviously a Johnny Saint fan. I think I might have even asked you that, because as soon as I was watching it, because it's very hard to replicate what Johnny Saint did, because he's very much so smooth in the things he does. But some of the things he did, I'm like, oh, okay, he's been watching some
Johnny
Saint.
I have a lot of British tint on me, yes.
Yeah,
will say this as we're finishing up. I know that is – a lot of people ask me, like, who would you wish you would have on? And – a year and a half ago, whatever, I was starting to do like seasons, so I do six at a time. And I have texts. Brody was like all about it. And I was like, I remember going him up to it at QT's gym and being like, hey, I know you just did Jericho's. Did you guys talk about like your kind of early stuff? He's like, no, actually, we talked about like the WWE stuff. And I was like, would you want to come on? He's like, of course, definitely, mm-hmm. definitely. And then he kept on putting it off, and I'd be like, hey, you want to do it? He's like, ah, I'm sleeping. Let's do it next week. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I don't know if there's a lesson to be learned there, but he kept on saying, let's do it next week. And then obviously, you know, Brody passed. But yeah. And it's kind of like one of those things. It's like, you know, don't tell somebody you love them next week or whatever it is. Like, I don't want to mix that up, but like,
no, you're totally right.
Yeah.
Right,
and right. So like that kind of always, not that it makes me sad that I didn't have him on the show, but just, I don't know. That's one I always wish I had. And it makes me a little upset that, I don't know, that I didn't push harder, or I don't know what my feelings are. I guess I haven't really processed them, but
I'm glad that I had you on my show.
Yeah,
pioneers of the podcasting game. And like I said, I want to have you back on the cruise and do more of the unprofessional wrestling. And I actually want to sit and watch the whole show because it was hilarious. So
I mean, I think everything's going in order. I'll be there in October.
That's what I've heard.
I'd like to see
everybody. Well, we'll make it official. We're announcing right now. If you haven't heard already, Cole Caban will be on the Jericho Cruise this year.
All right.
Thanks, dude.
Chris, I appreciate it.